Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
You're live, Dave.
Oh, hey. Welcome, everybody, to the Swolecast here on RotorGrinders.com. Listen, today is going to be a fun show. I don't know if it's going to be an educational show, but I do know it's going to be a fun show because the guest we have on today, he reminds us that, you know, as we like to say, sometimes you just need to live a little. So come on in. It's the Swolecast.
Please don't do me, bro.
It's the poop narrative.
Pigeon's been waiting to say those words.
No.
For 5 years. No. Amazing.
That's like the NWO.
Yeah, I like the I like the pixelated version as well. So all right. Welcome everybody to the Swolecast, guys. Pete, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Little stressed, Dave, trying to get ready for a flight today, trying to get our house ready for an open house, still trying to entertain everyone, you know, just juggling lots of stuff right now.
Your flight, where are you going? To Vegas?
Colorado.
Oh, okay, great. Davis, how are you?
You know, less than a month until I get married, so I've just got shit to do all day, every day. And David, as you know, you've known me for a long time, I don't really like to do stuff. I kind of just like to hang out. I don't like having a big, long to-do list.
This is when it gets it. I mean, this is crunch time right here.
We've tracked down everyone's RSVP though, so we got no question marks left on that list. So that was good.
Good. All right, Davis, are you cutting weight right now? Is what I want to know.
No, if anything, I'm probably doing the opposite.
Have you already been measured for your tux and everything? Like,
I just went and got my final measurements yesterday.
Okay, all right. So as long as you don't go too high or low above that.
Well, my suit I got when I was like fat. I'm like skinny guy fat right now. Like, you can't tell I'm that fat when I have a t-shirt on. So it's fine.
All right. I want to bring on today's guest. He's Jeff Edelstein. Jeff, he writes for a lot of different sites, and now we are BC brethren. We're Better Collective brethren. And I met him last year, I guess, in Jersey.
That's right.
And I was like, hey, you know, and he was like, oh, I know who you are. I've been listening to the Swolecast for forever. That's so, true. Of course, you know me. You know, I get these interactions all the time. But I say to tell me more. So I want to know, Jeff, tell us about your Swolecast upbringing.
Yeah. So
raised by Swolecast. That's a terrifying thought.
My mother introduced it to me when I was 3 years old.
Right.
I've been, you know, playing DFS for a while, and, you know, I just kind of joined Roto Grinders way back when. And so, you know, I started watching the Swolecast, and, you know, I learned how to, I mean, I think the most important thing I took away from it was you got to drink a lot of water.
Yeah.
And you got to set your European soccer lineups, you know, every chance you get. Those are the big takeaways. But, you know, yeah, you found me just so, you know, so Peter and Davis know, you know, I know Kitchen does a lot of discovering of talent.
Right.
Yes.
He found me in Jersey. What he didn't say is that he found me under an overpass. Yeah. He took me in and, you know, cleaned me up. And, you know, here I am today.
It's really, what he does. It's what it's he does. He's a he's a beautiful man. He taught you how to live a little.
Yeah, I'd say so. I'd say so.
The live a little bit from last week has it's really taken off. Jeff, how many best balls have you done?
I'm in the low 40s at this point.
Okay.
That's a healthy number. That's a much
very healthy, well-adjusted number.
That's much better than my number. You are a much more well-adjusted person than me.
The truth of it is I started getting a little I don't want to say bored, but like
thank you, Jeff. That's what I'm saying.
It does get a little
You've done three drafts, Kitchen.
It gets boring. It does get boring.
This is what I want. I want them to do, you know, they're always like trying to do new, you know, a few different things. You know, they did you know, with the two quarterbacks or whatever. I want them to do a 10-second draft. We're instead of 30 seconds,
give me 10
seconds.
Yes, give me, sign me up.
Right?
Jeff, this is what I've been saying. This is what I've been saying. People will get bored because they start so early. By the end of it, you got to mix it up a little bit. Davis is just reaffirming this. It took you to be on the show to have him reaffirm this. I also want to point out, I got made fun of last week for drafting two backup Bucks running backs.
It was a mistake.
Here we go.
Well, lo and behold, the prestigious Scott Fish Bowl 12. I get a notification that, White and Vaughn on the same team. Soccer Dave would be proud. So, of course, I thought it was under 072, the guy who mentioned me, his team. And then I see it's Davis. Davis just keeps walking
in my
footsteps.
Much different move in a roster management league where we have 49 days left for news to happen in terms of waivers than in an 18-man roster league where you have no transactions available.
It's the optics, though, Davis. The optics are pretty bad for you.
Well, to be honest, I've been a Rashad White maxi the entire time, but Hayden Winks talked me into Keyshawn Vaughn like 2 weeks ago. We did a stream together, so... And of course, just the perfect marriage of Leonard Fournette weighing two of me. That's been big news. That's been big news in my household.
Hayden Winks is actually part of Kitchen's tree. So in a lot of ways, Kitchen talked you into Keyshawn Vaughn.
I call him my great grandfather.
Jeff, how invested are you into the weight of these players? Because I'm getting like sleeper notifications now about like wide receivers that have put on weight. Obviously running backs that put on weight as well.
Can you name a wide receiver who's put on weight, Dave, before we go to Jeff?
Yeah.
Give me one.
I feel like it was a Colts wide receiver yesterday. But obviously CeeDee Lamb was the first. It's these rookie wide receivers, these second year or third year wide receivers.
I try to tune out all this nonsense, honestly. Yeah. You know, except like, I mean, Fournette weighing 260. I mean, he's like 10 pounds away from like, you know, diabetes, you know, I mean, so that's a big one, I guess. And this is not the first time that he's come to camp like way out of shape, right?
But it's been like 240 before. Dude, 260 is like, I don't know if Gronk was ever listed at 260.
260 is thick. I mean,
there was that clip of him running on the treadmill with the wide receivers a couple weeks ago, and their treadmills were not moving, and Leonard Fournette's treadmill was held on for dear life. It's rocking left and right. It's like, and it'll probably be fine. And like, obviously the big rebuttal to all this is Brady. He's got a limited time left playing football and he is not, I mean, dude's 46. Like he is past halfway of life expectancy for,
slow down.
Yeah. Well, and the big counter, the big counter would just be Brady would literally like rather retire than, you know, trust pass protection to a rookie. So like, I don't think Fournette is like undraftable, but I am much more interested in pulling the lever on backup Tampa Bay running backs now.
Yes. So this makes you more likely. Pete, are you in the same camp?
Yes. I've been Rashad White's one of my most exposed players that I have so far. So I've been kind of a little happy that if he moves up a bit, because then I can, you know, pump the brakes. I was actually talking about this with Davis the other day, where it's when it goes the other direction, where the guy you've loading up on gets cheaper, and then you're like,
not a good feeling.
Do I keep dollar cost averaging down on this? So I'm okay with the Rashad White moving up movement. I do not know if I will join you guys on the Keyshawn Vaughn train.
Well, you know, it makes sense, right? White's the rookie. Vaughn's been on the team 3 years. He was playing more snaps than Giovanni Bernard last year when Fournette was hurt. Vaughn started the playoff game against the Eagles, right?
Yeah.
I
guess the question though is like, are they taking White in the third round without Brady's, you know, nod?
Well, he was technically a retired member of the team, right?
That's right.
Drew Dinkmeyer, by the way, I forgot to say this yesterday when we were talking. Drew Dinkmeyer will tell you a great story about what Davis Maddock does with exposures when guys he likes gets a little bit cheaper, because Bankmeyer and I, the first year MFL 10s came around, we did a bunch of them together, and we would kind of consult, and we were just smashing the 3-4 turn on Bishop Sankey and Michael Floyd, who were, I think it was 2014, two of the biggest busts in fantasy football history. Like, Bishop Sankey, I don't think ever started a game for the Titans. Like, it was one of the worst scenes of all time.
I remember that year fondly because that was the first year I played Dynasty Football 2014, which was a fun year to get in for that rookie class that was loaded, but we had the startup draft before it, and I was debating between Michael Floyd and DeAndre Hopkins in
tough
the third
scenes.
Round.
Yeah.
And I luckily took Hopkins, but I was razor thin from just hating Dynasty forever because I took Michael Floyd.
Because you took Michael Floyd.
Yeah. I remember that was also the Peyton Manning noodle arm year as well, because I had quite a few teams with that.
Jeff, when did you start playing best ball? Do you remember were you around in the MFL 10 days
when you made
all your picks via email?
No, best ball. I ignored best ball. I didn't think I would enjoy it. And then, last year is when I started, and I enjoyed it like to the point of, trouble.
Are you in the Scott Fishbowl?
No.
Okay.
You're not?
No, I don't know. I mean, what do I do?
I can get you in. I know Scott.
You got a guy.
Yeah.
Well, Peter and I both came to the same conclusion yesterday, which is that best ball has really broken our brains. Like, Scott Fishbowl used to be so exciting. It was the start of the draft season, everything, and it kind of just felt like not as magical when you've already pounded 150 drafts by July 15th. You know.
It's great. No, I've never been more ready for football as a result of playing best ball. Like, I can, 100%. I can do any draft, anytime, any day, anywhere, you know, like my home league, you know, I'm still in my home league that I've been playing in, hold your ears, guys, since 1986.
Whoa.
And
amazing.
We've been playing in that league since before I was born, and I'm fake young.
That's great. Yeah, I was a freshman in high school. One of my buddies came up to me in the hall. He's like, we're doing this thing called fancy football. You want to do it? I'm like, of course, you know. Nobody knew what we were doing, of course, because, you know, nobody knows what you were doing. And my first round pick that year was Tony Franklin, kicker, New England Patriots.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah. Years later, one of the guys in the league tracked him down. And I think he owns a car dealership somewhere. And he got him to, like, write me a note, like an autographed note saying, you know, what the F are you doing drafting a kicker in the first round? You moron, you know, signed Tony Franklin.
That's before nice. JJ's nice dad had the late round kicker theory.
Fifth pick, I took him. He was one of two kickers to go that year in the first round. So, you know, I learned
a few
things.
I've been playing since 99, so not, I mean.
I was the first, that was the first year I played, was 99. I was seven.
Oh, my gosh. Peter, what about you? What, 2008, 2009?
No, I mean, so my
Pete found fantasy football around the same time he found improv comedy in Boston in 2015. Yeah.
It's like, what if we could mix these two?
No. This was so my first time playing fantasy football was in 2004. I would go to the high school library with my buddy, and we never actually had the time to do the Yahoo NBA fast drafts, but they had an automated draft thing, which makes no sense because the whole fun part of the draft is getting to do it. But we never had time to do a full draft. So we would do the like simulate draft thing, just get our team spit out. You stare at your team, decide if you'd actually want to continue through with it or just go and rip another automated draft. So it was like lotto tickets for fantasy drafting. Not optimal, but that was my introduction to fantasy sports.
Yeah, well, I mean,
it's like a business model. Let's do it.
Yeah, it is. Jeff is a grinder, though, more so than any of us on here, even me.
He's more of a grinder than me. Is he playing LPGA Tour DFS this week?
He's playing Korean baseball still. Where he was last year.
They don't have it anymore. They don't offer it this year.
After the season started, he was waking up at 3 a.m. to set his Korean baseball lineups.
You know, it was COVID times, man.
Yeah. I mean, who amongst us did not have a 3 a.m. alarm to check A-League soccer DFS?
Well, I always did think that was interesting, the people that continued the kind of COVID activities post-COVID, you know, specifically with DFS. Like, I got really into League of Legends, and then I quickly abandoned that once football.
I gave it up. It's interesting. That's actually the one that stuck around in terms of, like, prize pools. Like, I saw last night they had a 20K to first. It's like that. I mean, that's bigger than most weeks for soccer. Like,
yeah,
people seem to – which I guess makes sense because – people who are on their computers all the time anyways, it's like, what's the difference, COVID or not? Like, I'm still playing League of Legends DFS.
For me, that was the height of, like, degeneracy because, like, yes. I, to this day, I cannot tell you what the hell is going on in those League of Legends games. No. Or
I can a little bit if I remember right.
But I'm like, oh, this lineup works.
Sure.
Well, even sweating those games, like there'd just be like a flurry of action happening. You're like, I don't know if this is good for me. I don't know if it's bad. You're just staring at the numbers, being like, I hope number goes up for my.
You got it. You just had to rely on the commentators, and it was like if you had the gold lead because it had like sort of a cascading effect on how many points you were getting. I remember that. Like having the gold lead. Like once it got to a certain point, it was like really unlikely that the team with less gold would win.
Olympic rough. Soccer. That's rough. What Carlos said. That was
Dave. That do you think that break where real sports were not available because of COVID, like basically signaled your retirement as a DFS player? Because you were just like already kind of not having fun anyway. And then once you had the excuse to just totally not.
No,
play,
the summer before that, I just baseball was like the stopping point for me because you get into, you know, August and July for baseball, and it's tough.
Well, you know, I won the big DraftKings GPP the very last day of the season last year for baseball. Well, playing Billy Hamilton.
Right, great for you, but that's not what
that's not me. It was on an NFL Sunday too.
Oof.
Like, just get me to preseason, basically, and that's why best ball has also rescued things. As well, and that's why I want as many different formats as possible
so that you can engage in drafting in them
with your two
teams.
So I want to push back against this take that it gets boring. First of all, they don't get boring for me. I literally get
excited.
Here we
go. Big best ball chiming in.
Here we go. But I'm going to push back against your thing about needing to reinvent the wheel and stuff, because we talked about this with the Superflex one. I was excited to have that one come out too, but you, everywhere you look, people weren't actually that interested in it. They just wanted another normal $5 puppy because there's this comfort that comes with just doing something super familiar over and over. Like, people don't like the Superflex.
They like the content. You know, it's like cards, right? Like, there are so many different variations of poker games you can play, and pros will tell you, oh, you know, PLO is actually the game, right? Or you know, oh, I really like playing the mixed game at the Borgata or whatever. But at the end of the day, what people want is they want to watch No Limit and they want to play No Limit. Like, 95% of people who are interested in poker really only care about No Limit.
I just think auction can bring a whole new
it's too much. That's a long day.
Someone
have to figure a way out to like Charch, Paul Charchian. They had like a test site that they did. I thought that it was good, but maybe before its time, because there was no mobile application for it. And there has to be like an app for whatever you're rolling out, right? But like something that you can quickly do an auction.
I mean, what is the max that first place could be in an auction league best ball draft?
I don't know. It's for the fun.
No one is dedicating 8 hours of their life for something that's fun. Like the hourly that I'm getting on these best balls, unless I win, is so bad anyways. I can't imagine what the hourly return on an auction would be.
I said this, I think, 2 years ago, maybe last year, and I'm kind of back on this train. there is, because everyone's grinding these uber efficient, low margin drafts, unless you win like the top three, right? Top three or four. Like that's what you're going for, your lottery ticket for these best ball drafts. I really think there's something that people are overlooking for EV. You know what that is?
The cash games.
Six man cash game drafts. There is, they have not caught up to the strategy. It's just like they're just drafting based on ADP and they don't realize that there is definitely positive EV for these six man drafts. Have you played any six man drafts, Davis?
No.
Time is money.
I would prefer to be winning $2 million, not like $87.
You're not going to win $2 million, especially with your can't draft Robert Woods 12 spots early take.
Live like a little.
You're vying for third place, maybe in your local third
place in Best Ball Mania 2 would be good for me. That would
In your draft, not in the total thing.
Can we talk about the Week 17 Mania? That's
yeah.
Yes, please. I love getting a fresh take on Week 17 Mania.
So I wholly understand Week 17 Mania. It makes total sense, and like it makes a lot of sense. But there's so many other factors that you have to like just to get to Week 17. Right. There's so many things that have to go right for you. And I remember last year I lucked myself into the finals. Right, I finished 151st out of 160. But I remember I had Mark Andrews on my team.
And wait, you were in the best ball finals last year?
I was. Yeah. Well, I'm big time.
No, that's good.
No, I'm big time. I got
so again. Davis is points. The only one not. It was not been to the best ball finals.
I'll give him some pointers later. But right, the idea here, so much has to go right. And I had Mark Andrews, and I think like probably 40-50% of the teams had Mark Andrews. He had a huge 15 and 16, and like so I could have like drafted everything set for Week 17, but if I didn't have Andrews, I wasn't going to like get there. So I think Davis, you tweeted something out the other day. Like if you're not doing one of these like eight different things, you're drawn dead in best ball, yeah. Right?
Davis and, with his threads.
Well, I mean, do you think that, I mean, is it possible that Week 17, the idea of Week 17 has taken like too much hold right now?
I have big time thoughts on this. What has happened is people, and I will admit titling the video Week 17 is all that matters.
I wonder, we're all looking for the guy who did this.
Well, the dude pumping his bags.
Hey, God. But what has happened is it has become the ultimate straw man where people, I see so many tweets are like, I think it's a bad idea to just only be focusing on Week 17. I mean, go look at the rosters of anyone focusing on correlation right now. No one is massively reaching ahead of ADP. I think you could say some people are overstacking a little bit, but that I think just applies to kind of how you view like season long stacking, not even Week 17 itself. And so it's just become this straw man where it's like, show me these rosters that are so overly correlated that they're bad. And on top of that, no one has shown me what you're supposed to do if you're not focusing on Week 17. I'm still waiting for one person to give me a plan. What should I be doing if I'm not trying to optimize?
Use your fucking brain. Just pick the best plays and live.
You've
a little,
already
bro.
Been in the finals.
Yeah. But what about prioritizing Week 15 just so that you like you're gonna like
no. Osimo did a little bit of different math than Michael Dubner, which is the guy that Pete was working with for his video, which agreed on the premise that Week 17 is the most important thing, but disagreed that optimizing for Week 17 points has the highest value. Osimo's, which I don't know, his I don't know inside the black box or anything, but his findings were that actually optimizing for Week 16 is the highest dollar return value if you accept that you are powerless over what your players do in Week 17 and that just getting as many bullets in Week 17 where all the money is concentrated is actually the most valuable, which really at the end of the day, it just comes down to like stacking teams is really the optimal strategy. Like yes. Having four players from the same team and having that team either have a really good playoffs or just like in the case of like the Giants ADPs or the Colts or the Jets or the Jaguars, where they win more games, they score more points than expected. So all of those players are smashing their ADPs. And,
but Jeff, don't you think that, okay, let's say my video was titled Week 16 and 17 is all that matters. The same straw man argument. I think it's bad just to be optimizing for these final 2 weeks of the season. People aren't actually pushing back against like the evidence and what we're trying to say. They're pushing back because they don't want to think about this through like a game theory or DFS lens. They do just want to live a little and hashtag draft the best players and not have to be worried about anything else. And it triggers them massively that the way this tournament is structured means they have to think about it through a different lens than which they're comfortable with.
Okay, so you're talking about looking through a DFS lens when you're drafting these best ball lineups. Last week during my draft, you guys were getting upset.
We can't possibly explain it to you in more explain why what you were doing was bad.
Because I was not drafting with the field. I still don't understand how you can look through a lens. And Davis, I want to read
you paid $6,000 for Treylon Burke when everyone else you're playing with paid $5,000 for him.
Okay,
is what you
Davis,
did.
Do you you're reverting back to like the single game contest when you're like, oh, I got to max it out. I got to have 50,000 or 49.5 or more. And when we know that that is not the only strategy, right? Like people leave more than $1,000 left in their roster builds.
Yeah. Optimizing for what's 17 times 30 to 256 regular season games, right? So optimizing for 256 games and the literal trillions of potential variables there is much different than optimizing for Ravens Steelers on Thursday Night Football. Well,
then I'm going to read you this tweet. That
also a salary cap game with a multiplier is also
Stop being disingenuous. I want to read this tweet. I've been thinking a lot about best ball stacking week 17, et cetera. And this is where I've landed. Every time you draft, you need to have a lever against the field, or you are just gambling. That lever can be correlation, player evaluation skill, inside info on playing time, LOL, structure, etc. I have my opinions on which levers are
best. Inside info on playing time would be the biggest lever if you had it. That would literally be the top lever.
No, Davis, I'm laughing because of your quote unquote inside info, which was laughable at the time. All right. So anyways, wouldn't a lever be ADP, drafting against ADP?
Yeah, you're giving a different direction. Yeah, you are giving you are de-levering yourself. You are giving your opponents leverage by giving them better, like you're giving them better. So both inside your 12-man league, you are giving your opponents better prices on their players, and you are up against 400,000
better
whatever.
Prices based on your own point of
no,
view.
No, better on literally on the market.
But you're drafting with the market. This is what I'm saying. You're basing everything off the market.
That's what a good trader in any field does. They base it off the market.
You ever heard of inflation? Stuff happens.
The thing I think about with it when you're a lot of times when you're reaching, and this is why reaching for week 17 stacks is bad, because not only are you sacrificing ADP value, but a lot of the field who's making similar mistakes is going to have similar rosters than you.
Then
you're going to be competing against the teams that had more patience and were able to get the same stacks you're reaching for, but with an extra few players snuck in because they weren't reaching.
Yeah. ADP seems to matter a lot more right now than it did in the beginning of the season, though, right? Would you say
ADP? I mean, it's going to be way stronger right now, right? It's the same thing as an NFL line that's been bet into $20 million versus the first three bets that come in.
I mean, I haven't seen many big mistakes recently in the drafts I've been doing. You know what I mean? Whereas I thought, like, you know, 2 months ago, I thought that a lot of people were doing things that didn't make any sense.
Right. Well, you can be unique in your drafts, Jeff, but apparently only if your uniqueness correlates with ADP. Because if you reach, Davis, you said in last week's draft, I can't believe you reached 12 spots earlier for Robert Woods. That's a round earlier. I just don't understand how.
Yeah. So someone else, so you just took Robert Woods and whoever, and someone else just took a round 9 player and Robert Woods. They got, you know, an extra 10% of value. Like they're already beating you. You're literally already losing based off that reach.
If you are going off that the market is perfect during the season, you are accurately predicting everything that's going to happen with these ADPs.
Yeah, I mean, what you're saying,
McCaffrey's going to be first, everything's going to be second. You are not giving anything to chance, and that is what I mean, I'm saying.
Literally, your argument is just like, it doesn't matter, draft whoever, eat Arby's, like, just
thank
pick
you.
The best.
Thank you, but isn't just the whole, I don't understand how you could say, oh, you
I mean, that is an approach. That is an approach that is guaranteed to lose money over the long run. You might win money once.
Yeah.
It's like sometimes
one team that makes it through, Davis.
Sometimes
ashes.
Oh, this is like the most tilted you've gotten me.
Can I call you Min Cash Matic? Because that's kind of what you've turned into,
buddy. There is no shame. There is no shame in a Min Cash.
But this is what I'm saying, Davis. If you have this thing about you just wanting to Min Cash with ADP with all the other ADP bros, then just play six man, because there's more EV in that than your Min Cash strategies. We got to move on.
You're driving me.
I'm sorry.
Fucking insane.
We got it. Davis,
welcome
have
to the show, Jeff.
Yeah, we don't have time for Davis.
I've brought pain to the show here. I apologize.
Yeah, no, Davis is literally on air, like just bending himself into a pretzel. Got to be different, but not that different. All right.
That would be good advice for you to follow. You need to be different, but not so different. You're creating bad teams.
But not different that way. Got it. All right. Let's see. Kitchen with a big short strategy. That's what Graham Benson said. That is. Like, what if? Play whoever you want. All right, Jeff, let's talk about some of the off-season narratives. You are what would you say your job is right now?
that's a tough question. I don't know. I cover the United States gambling industry for, you know, Sports Handle, US Bets, and assorted other websites.
Yeah,
you know, all under the, you know, BC banner.
So you do a pretty good job, but there's been a few good stories. One of my favorite ones was when we were in Jersey last year, and you covered the Jason Robbins story.
Oh, the what? Where he was that thought that he had a burner account.
Yeah,
that was great.
Yeah,
no, that was also right. So yeah, this guy Mo something or another starts tweeting. He's got no followers, nothing, and all it is like, you know, I will give Jason Robbins like all the sex he wants. I think Jason Robbins is awesome. Jason Robbins is the best. DraftKings is the best. And then somebody started like pointing out that this looks like a burner account.
Yeah,
and I thought this would make a great story if it was indeed a burner account. So I started investigating it. And I was like all ready to go with that. It really seemed like it was. And I, you know, but then this guy, Mo, who I messaged, he reaches out to me and he calls me up and he like, we go live and it's clearly not Jason Robbins. And so at this point I'm thinking, well, if it's some kind of like really deep scam that the CEO of a major American company is pulling, would be even better. So I go ahead and I write it. And the first, and like the we titled it something to the effect of, does Jason Robbins have a burner account? Knowing that would get a few eyeballs. And yeah, it got some eyeballs, including Jason Robbins, who immediately took to Twitter and like called me every name like in the book. Like, this asshole doesn't, you know, this is journalism. And I message him. I'm like, dude, read the story. Like, I say that it's not a burner account. Like, we tracked the guy down. And then he messaged me, he DMs me and apologizes. And then next thing I know, I have the two of them on the phone. And I say to him, you know, now I'm just having fun. I mean, yeah, literally, my kids are upstairs. My wife's upstairs. I'm in the basement, like, talking to the CEO of DraftKings and some dude named Mo.
Yeah.
Who's, like, from Pakistan, and he's just a trader, and he's, like, trying to – he has a charity. And
I was
going to
say, was it just that he had a huge DraftKings
he has a
stock
huge
bag?
Position. Yep. And he's and he was trying to, like, you know, just pump it up a little bit. But anyway,
he's basically our generation's A-Raven 52.
I can't speak to that. I don't know who the hell he's talking about. But regardless, I'm on the phone with Robbins and this guy, and the guy mentions a charity. And I say, Jason, why don't you donate? This is the first time I've ever talked to Jason Robbins. I go, Jason, you should donate money to this guy for his charity. He's like, that's a great idea. 10 minutes later, the other guy's sending me a screenshot of $100,000 that Robbins donated to the guy's charity. And they're, as we speak, building a school in Pakistan, which is, there's a giant, I'm going to be writing about it next month, a giant sign in the middle of desert Pakistan with Jason Robbins' face saying, thank you, Jason Robbins. It's crazy.
That's awesome. Pete actually did that with Terrace Marshall last year. Had a
yeah, exactly. Yeah, Jeff actually called me and he was threatening to write about me pumping and dumping my best ball bags, and I was able to talk him off that article.
Talked me down. Who do gave you 10% stake?
Of course. Jeff, I am curious, like, one thing I always talk about this with my buddy Brian Hooper, and about like just kind of drama and intrigue within DFS. And as someone who has to like find compelling stories that people are actually clicking on, obviously the Jason Robbins one is like perfect. The scandal with the Bachelor contestants is up there. But do you find it hard to cover DFS from an angle that would be interesting to people other than who know the name A. Raven?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're right, you know, but we're writing for a pretty specific audience in general to begin with, right? We're writing for people either in the industry or interested in the industry. So, you know, but at the, you know, getting fine, it's always fun to find like the stories that we know people are going to enjoy. Like, I've been dying to write, and I know it's just never going to happen after talking to a few people, is like the real inside story of, you know, the insider trading scandal that rocked DraftKings in the daily fantasy world, you know, 7 years ago. You know, I've reached out to a few people, and
hashtag
it is clear,
Ethan Gate.
Yeah, it is clear I'm not, that the real story is never going to be told to me, whatever it is. Yeah. So, but it's fun,
like,
to
like 10 years from now, when no one cares about daily fantasy anymore and it's all betting, you should try and write a spec script for that. Cause it'd be a good movie.
I would like to, and I would like to write it with you.
You got to producer's credits.
I don't know.
Some
about
people
that.
Do know what happened.
I can't imagine how miserable it would be to have Kitchen as a writing partner on a feature-length script.
You just got, hey, listen, I know this is the way it's done. I know this is what a page length is supposed to be, but just live a little.
Jeff's like, wait, this happened verbatim? And I'm like, eh, kind of.
Somewhat. Based on true events.
Yeah, somewhat. I mean, you could definitely write like a based on true events script for the beginning of DFS.
But I want to go back to some of Davis. Do you really think that DFS is going to go the way of the dinosaur in 10 years? I hope
these
not.
Sites don't care, man. They don't care at all.
There will always be niche sites, just like there's always going
to
be dinosaurs.
Yeah, I'm not saying DFS will cease to exist, or that you can't win $1 million on it or whatever. But you'll innovation. Adding new sports, you know, even like rake back and stuff. It's all moving to the sports books.
See, I think it might survive, because I think I tend to agree with what you're saying, that these sites don't care about DFS, but they don't care about sports betting either.
They just care about money.
They care about casino. That's where the real money is.
Yeah.
You know, right now there's only like 6 or 7 states that have legalized it. But like, as part of my job, I cover like Michigan, everything in Michigan. It's very exciting, like covering like legislative action on the gambling front in Michigan. I'll tell you, hours worth of fun stories. Exciting. But the DraftKings, FanDuel, they're all there. They're making 10, 12 times more a month in casino than they are in sports betting.
Yeah, I played online blackjack on FanDuel. Who hasn't?
Yeah, but have you played DraftKings Rocket, Davis?
Oh God,
no. When Pete and I went to New York, I had apparently already used my DraftKings like free bet or whatever, so I was on FanDuel.
Oh, that DraftKings.
You guys ever done live dealer roulette on one of these sketchy offshore sites where it's like literally it's like a ransom camera on this gal and she's just dealing blackjack or whatever?
No. But that's like stake.com. That's the one that like Drake and all them Bodog
Bovada offers stuff like that.
Yeah, well, DraftKings.
Not that I would have any information. If the FBI is watching this, I have no information on that. I've heard all about this third hand. I have no direct knowledge.
DraftKings and Fan, you know, and MGM, they all have live dealer stuff also now. And what's great is
really,
Yeah. And if you go into like the $5 blackjack room, there's like 180 people playing, and all it takes is one person. There's always one person who, like, I guess hashtag wants to live a little and is hitting on 20 just to screw with everybody, you know. And the chat is great. People are just screaming and hollering at the guys. But
that chat being way worse than the old FanDuel chat.
How many people who still play DFS today? Actually, this Venn diagram, people who have registered at least one team in Best Ball Mania 3 and remember when FanDuel had a live chat. How many people are in the interior?
Probably
bubble?
A small percentage.
It's probably just me, you, CSU, and Dan Bach. Those are the only people.
FanDuel's live chat was the worst because
Blake Griffin is out.
Yeah, you'd be following out, and they're basically, it's just a Wild West. And Draft Street also had a chat, and that's where I came to hate Drew Dinkmeyer because he was so cocky on there. Oh, he was just the absolute worst. And he'll tell you how bad he was. He used to be, man, but he's gotten a lot better, to his credit.
We got a question for Jeff here.
Yeah, I cannot explain why you can't use Underdog on the browser in Indiana. That's
so my experience
does not provide legal advice. He just covers the stories.
So my experience with Underdog's VPN is that they must have last offseason upgraded it to a new provider because I used to be able to VPN in 2 years ago, and I used to be able to VPN on Draft because I lived in Missouri, which was not legal until last offseason. And whatever they upgraded to is the top of the line because you cannot get in. So if your browser has anything tricky, if there's any gray area in Indiana, like their VPN is going to catch it. Just must be the A10.
Speaking of Underdog and sports betting, you know, they're getting into sports betting, right? They just filed for an Ohio license and they got a Colorado license. And they won't tell me. I've like interviewed them a bunch of times, but like Jeremy swears that there's like stuff that they're going to do that like nobody else is doing. That, you know,
I've got an inside source. He's from the Soccer Dave tree.
I'd love to know what they're going to do. I'm curious to know what they're going to do.
Claiming Jeremy LaVine is part of the Soccer Dave tree is
no, not Jeremy. Not Jeremy. You know Jordan? Who it is. Jordan.
Jordan is not part of your tree. Jordan is like one of my best friends. He does not count for you.
he got brought up through Fantasy Insiders.
Jordan 100%. Is like Jordan is my in real life best friend or
I
one
know,
of them.
We brought him on to write content for DFS because of you. But he's in the tree, Davis.
He is not. You are not counting Jordan as part of your tree.
Then whose tree is he in?
Mine. My tree.
And whose tree are you in, Davis?
No, I'm my own tree, buddy.
Thank you.
Now, I'm very nervous because Kitchen just sent me 40 cases of vitamins that he told me I had to sell.
When is Kitchen gonna reveal?
Kitchen is MLM scheme. He is Herbalifing DFS talent.
Davis, Jordan is 100% in my downline, and you cannot take that away.
You know what's crazy is that Kitchen actually has the most Twitter followers of anyone in the fantasy industry when you account for all of his trees Twitter followers.
Yeah. That means he also gets lots of engagements on his tweets too, and not just 4 per tweet.
No, but like, TreeCast. Like, there are people who I will readily admit not in the Soccer Dave tree. Like, or I could be even in like the Dan Bach tree, right? Because he kind of brought me on. Silva is not in the David Kitchen tree, but honestly, I don't want Silva in our tree. Pete, was Silva talking trash? I want to know.
Yeah.
What did he say?
Someone tagged me in the Discord and said that he was talking shit at the top of the podcast, and he tried to do a brief aside where he said, you know, back in the day on the Swolecast, which rest in peace to that show. I don't think it's going on anymore. And then he continued with some anecdote where they tried to use grinding film to help them be good at fantasy. So I don't know how that worked, but yeah, Silva, we still live rent free in Silva's head.
Yeah. This is like when this is what he does publicly. He'll bash the Swolecast, the show that kind of gave him the DFS platform that now he's with.
I personally credit Fantasy Shane with giving him a DFS platform.
No, that was the year he had like every platform was giving it to him.
No one secures the bag better than Evan Silva.
Well,
and
did.
I mean that is 100% compliment.
But now he went behind the paywall.
So. Yeah, I'm sure the bag is terrible behind the paywall.
No, like he secured the bag, but just with one site. He used to charge like these.
Well, David, the name of the game in a capitalist economy is to do the least amount of work with the greatest amount of return. So Evan Silva has won the game.
David, I understand what you're saying. You have to understand what I'm saying as far as like the sub, what we're talking about, the subcontractor, what he was doing a few years ago. And that's when like Levitan was telling him, hey man, you got to charge like $600 a show. So he would just throw out numbers and people would pay it because they had money. So
yeah, Levitan was right. And Silva was right. Labor is always underpriced.
Now that I hear Silva's negotiation tactic, I'm going to have to renegotiate my
Yeah, we did not pay $600. We did not pay $600.
This show would have gotten canceled way long ago if that was our show, right?
David asked me to do it for free every year.
It would be good for your brand.
Yeah.
It's worth good exposure.
Yeah, it's still, I mean, you do work for a competitor, so it's just like common sense that says.
What a comment. I thought Evan Silva was a middle reliever for the Mets until David Kitchen introduced him on the Swolecast.
Like, people went to Silva for their, like, season-long and, you know, their
football match. David, this is even more absurd than claiming that Jordan Case is part of your tree. Like, Evan gave us legitimacy, bud.
At first, yeah. No. I mean, he was part of it, but...
They won't be saying the same thing about me. No worries.
What did... Evan gave legitimacy. I'm not doubting, like, what Evan brought to the show. But when Pete came to the show, what did people say? Wow,
who's that guy?
This is actually better. It's actually better.
Did they? I don't know about that.
I think probably the number one comment we get is, why are these guys laughing so much? I wish people they would talk about the plays. Why aren't they giving us the plays?
Davis, that's not why people tune into this show. They don't tune in for the show.
You're right. They don't tune in
for the plays. They tune in for a mixture of entertainment and education. And the Swolecast was really the first show to do that in the fantasy space.
Wrong. Jeff, okay, I got a question for you.
Maybe the Fantasy Football Power Hour was, or
how long? Well, you might not know this at all, or maybe you will. Is there ever a path to this casino with these casinos, you know, it all coming? Is poker ever going to be legal online in the United States ever again?
Yeah, I think it will be. I mean, you know, it's in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Nevada, and
Nevada.
I want to say West Virginia, it's legal right now. And there's like a compact between, like, I think New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Nevada are in a compact, and Michigan.
Where they can share prize pools.
Yep, and you can play each other. So yeah, I would imagine that, like, I guess it's going to be like on a state by state basis. I don't, you know, I think the federal, you know, the Wire Act will eventually come down when somebody, you know, cares enough to do it. But until then, it's going to be state by state.
Yeah.
So short answer is no, but kind of
annoying. Isn't that so annoying? And I live in Missouri, so I'm going to be the last state to get all this shit. I mean, sports betting was on the docket here and got struck down. Kansas passed sports betting before Missouri. They're going live in September, right?
I believe they are. Yeah. I mean, a lot of these states at this point, it's all just politicians being idiots is all it comes down to, you know, and like trying to get as much as they can, you know, squeeze every dollar out of it. But what they don't realize is that there's so little money in the end when in sports betting, you know, for the states, you know, we're 10, 12, 20 million dollars is not going to like turn your state around. You know, that's
all it is. That builds,
you know,
like half a road,
more or less. You know, but I mean, the one thing that does do theoretically, you know, and you know, and I think where it really got the ball rolling, you know, after New Jersey did it, was that it protects the consumer. You know, it protects the consumer. But you know, that's hard.
Okay. You said it.
Hard to say when you can't get $5 down on a side. You know,
are they still doing the? I remember when it launched, maybe in Washington D.C. I can't remember where it was, where they had like 40-cent lines on both sides. Like, is that still happening?
Well, that depends on the operator. D.C. is terrible because they went with the lottery provider or something, Gambit, and it's been a disaster. So D.C. is like a terrible example. I mean, the states that are doing it right, New Jersey is doing it right, Michigan's doing it right. You know, where it's a good balance, where, you know, they're not the operators are paying like 10-12% taxes, so they're not getting killed. You know, other states like New York, they're paying 51% taxes. It's not going to, it's unsustainable.
We thought Tennessee was bad with the handle. Jeff, Jeff is a sharp. Jeff is just another sharp that listens to the Swolecast. He gets limited.
I've gotten limited on player props. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
I wear it as a badge of honor, but it sucks.
Don't you get bored with player props, Jeff? Just grab the move? Same over and under every time.
Stop being completely different than move? Drafting the same person every day. It's like if you put the same player prop every single week.
I have very smoothed out exposures. Thank you very much.
All right. So obviously Pete's upset with my board take on under. But it's not that I'm bored. It's just that
No, let me say with your board take.
There's no changing variables right now. We don't have injuries. We don't have a force yet. There's no changing variables.
In the beginning,
right now,
2 months ago, I felt like I was getting something over on everybody when I would draft, you know, Rashad White or whatever. Now it's
if you have Kitchen mindset, you can always get something over on the field.
Because you can just take whoever you want.
Jeff, Pete's not upset at your board take. Pete's upset that it leaned or that it lended any sort of credibility to my previous take that people would get bored with best ball drafts. That's what he's upset with.
Fire up more draft streams. Watch the views and numbers roll in and tell me if people are getting bored with best ball content.
I'm tired of
Pete, whisper in a few years. Let's get that 10-second limit contest going.
So I do like the 10-second
limit. When you open a new account, do you make like 10 bad bets on purpose so that you don't get limited?
No, I don't. In fact, I do the exact opposite thing. You know, I'm done opening.
That seems very unwise. You should know better.
No, looking back, I should have. No, what I did in the beginning was I took advantage of every promo, and you know, I would arbitrage everything. And
I mean, that is just you're begging to get $5 down on NBA player props if you do that.
Davis is still going with the tank strategy.
Everyone knows when you open up a new account, you fire like a bunch of futures and overs right away, and they profile you as a rec better, and you will be much slower to get limited.
From what I've been told from the real gamblers in the space, the real sports bettors, the thing they're looking for the most overall is if you beat closing line. If you start routinely beating closing line, they slap you. You know, they slap you down immediately.
Yeah. You don't have to worry
when we enter
I'm like 10 minutes before lineup lock. That's you don't have to worry about
you're good to go there.
I got limited for the first time ever last year. I had always heard about this mythical limiting, and after I bet Shohei Ohtani to win MVP twice, and on the third time the most I could get down on it was $53.
Yeah. But then all your soccer takes kind of allows you to bet more, right?
Well, I'm just a very recreational bettor. I mostly bet golf. I mostly bet golf outrights and soccer sides, neither of which I'm very good at. So I don't get limited.
The consigliere says lizard.
No, I mean, this will people who work on the operator side will tell you this, that they have filters that can profile your bettors. And if the first 10 bets you make are bad bets, you will eventually get limited if you are crushing closing line value or you're killing them on player props, but you will be much slower to get limited if your first 10 bets are overs or like futures or outrights.
Let's face it, there's probably a threshold, and once you cross that threshold, regardless of what it is, right?
Some books are better than others, though. WinBet, I know, is really trying hard not to be like that.
Circa Sports in Nevada. Yeah. Do you think that will work out for Circa in the long run, being like, you know, the player's book or whatever? Like, doesn't that just mean they're limiting how much they can make?
I don't know. I mean, these guys are always starting at +110, right? You know, it's tough to lose if like you're always going to be.
That's true. If you can bet every game at +110, that's true. Right. You will make money. That's a good point.
Yeah.
All right. We got 6 minutes left.
The Swolecast should start their own little bookmaking operation. You know, like quietly on the side.
And the price doesn't matter because we're just you know, the market's not that efficient. We're
price
just
living, matters so. When you're talking about that, Davis. It doesn't so matter. Name, Lord's so, Field contest. When
so
you're
name
to be
your here. Name your price, and old soccer dad will take it because he's just living a little.
The key to living is being unique, but don't be unique in that way.
The key to living is being unique.
You know how Underdog will do the special lines and they'll be really off, like Joe Burrow throws for 1 yard. They should have Kitchen be their bookmaker, but just set his real lines, but they can serve as kind of the special.
Hey David, how many yards do you think Robert Woods gains this year? Ah, yeah, whatever.
1600 yards.
1700 yards for Robert Woods, 100 yards per game.
It's like points bet where like however many spots he goes over, like that's what round he's going
to
be in.
Robert Woods favorite to go over 1700 yards per the Swolecast.
Yeah. You would be Kansas City Chiefs, all Kansas City Chiefs players.
Are you guys all on the lines, by the way? Has everyone jumped on that bandwagon for this year?
Yeah.
So much fun.
Eric Eager talked me into it last week.
I saw a tweet, the Lions over on their win total was the most popular bet in July. How did that's crazy. Is that all coming from PFF? Are there?
It's just, it's the nerds. It's the nerds. Yeah.
Well, I don't think it's. Well, I think it's everybody just saying, well, they have to because look at all the talent that they have. And that they're still the Lions. It's like kind of like the Browns, right? Like everyone was on the Browns a couple of years ago, and then they just
cleared. And now they've got it all figured out, dude. They you know, they're good to go. They gamed the system with this Watson contract. You know, he's just going to abuse as many people as he wants, and the NFL is going to give him a 2-game suspension, and it's all good.
Jeff, what's your favorite stack right now? Your 40-plus best ball drafts.
Favorite or the one that I'm most exposed to?
What's the one you're most exposed to?
The Giants.
I was going to say, he's Tony. Sharp. He's got the Tony Jones, Wandale.
And Galloway. And I also have a ton of the Jets, Zach Wilson and all three of the receivers. You know, I like the
Jets one, yeah, for sure.
They were so cheap, you know, like you kind of stumble into them. You could have stumbled into that stack in every draft you did, like early on. And so I did. I stumbled like right into it.
Davis, what ugly stacks are you doing right now?
What's your current lever
that you're pulling?
It's so annoying to talk to David because he makes thinking about things and like oh, it's like thoughtful and engaging. And David's like, oh yeah, you think about what you're doing, you fucking nerd loser.
I'm just trying to understand what the lever you're pulling. You said you have to pull a lever.
The Giants, the Giants vomit stack is good. The Patriots you could do the Patriots vomit stack with all your last picks. You could do Mac Jones, one of his wide receivers, and Cedric Wilson or Raheem Mostert, all with your final 15, 16, 17, 18. That's a pretty good vomit one.
All right. And I did see you talking about three quarterbacks as well.
Yeah, it feels I mean, it's like, you know, the data is in the eye of the beholder, but Osimo's theory is that.
Are you working for Osimo these days? Is that.
No, it's just not that many people are coming up with like hard research best ball articles that demonstrate that they put a lot of money in and the results of putting a lot of that money in. And I've always thought that early in the off season, before training camp news comes out, that there's kind of like this latent value in drafting three quarterback teams, in the sense that we don't really have any idea what we're doing with our 17th and 18th round picks. Like a lot of those guys are going to be zeros, not play, get hurt, whatever. Whereas I feel pretty confident that Carson Wentz is going to play a bunch of games, or I feel pretty confident that Marcus Mariota or whoever is going to play a bunch of games, and that at some level is going to add points to my team. I'm taking Pickett instead because he's still the favorite for offensive rookie of the year. So feels like the market's telling me he's going to play a ton of games, but yeah, roughly that point.
My most favorite strategy, which is not a strategy, it was just fun to do, was I was taking 11 running backs and receivers with the first 11 picks. And then
I kind of like that.
Right. And then knowing that I was going to get Daniel Jones, Zach Wilson, I would take Daniel Jones, Zach Wilson. Then I would take Marcus Mariota and Desmond Ridder in 17 and 18. And then I would take Irv Smith and, you know, those tight ends, take three of them. So I'd have four quarterbacks, three tight ends, and then, you know, just the, you know, 11 rounds worth of quarterbacks and running backs and receivers. It was fun. I doubt it's going to work, but it was fun.
Well, you could just take whoever you want. That's what I was doing. Yeah, you can just take whoever you want.
Yeah, but don't correlate. You can only correlate if it.
You can only correlate if it makes sense in the market. Involves
current level markets. Don't try to correlate with something you think might happen.
So you know, as a long time listener of the Swolecast, I think today's episode and the animosity between Mr. Kitchen and Mr. Matic is thanks to David Kitchen inviting me. Right, knowing that I actually am a part of his tree, and that you know that there wouldn't be a 3-on-1 situation. Well, I think
you bring facts and logic to the table, and sometimes Davis has he has trouble with that. So he can only he's a sheep. It's like he sees one thing. Osimo writes an article, and he's like, "Oh, I'm going this way." It's just like during the season, he'll have a take on Tuesday or Wednesday. By the time he talks to some of these high stakes guys, he's completely shifted his take. He's a sheep. All right, Pete, what contrarian stacks are you drafting these days?
I have a hard out right now, but I do a lot of Davis Mills with Nico, with Mechie, with Brevin Jordan. He's kind of my ultimate backstop whenever I get boxed
out. Are you taking LaVisca or Zay Jones?
Visca. I mean,
yeah,
come on.
I just had this conversation with Liam like an hour ago. All
right. Like, I know Visca burned everyone, but Zay Jones is like a 19 condom pick. Like,
like literally 19.
Final thoughts, Pete, before you have to go.
No, Jeff, I really appreciate you coming into here. I wouldn't wish anyone having to be a guest on this show and dealing with all our shit, and you handled it admirably.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. All right. Pleasure to be here. RIP the boring drafting.
I think Jeff should come back and we should all do a draft and he should take 11 straight running backs and wide receivers.
I'm in.
Yeah, of course he's in.
There you go, Sosa. Line it up.
All right. Davis, final thoughts?
ADP doesn't matter. Points don't matter. Just take whoever you want, whenever you want. It's all fine.
Levers don't matter unless they're the ones I say. Jeff, what
do you guys? Yeah, I mean the only thing is, you guys interested in any vitamins?
Yeah. All right. Well, that will do it. Congrats to Jeff for checking something off his bucket list. Thanks for everyone tuning in. Leave us a comment, like the show, subscribe. We'll see you next time here on the Swolecast on RotoGrinders.com. Peace.